Welcome to the Glenelg Hopkins CMA's podcast series on land care leaders, where we're talking to landholders and community members who've invested in land care in their local area and are starting to reap the biodiversity benefits. In this episode, we meet John Keelor, who with his wife Brigitte runs the grazing property Cashmore Park, west of Portland in southwest Victoria. In John's family, the connection to environmental support through field naturalism goes back to the 1900s, and grazing on some of his property has the longest in the history of Victoria, going back to the very first farmer settlers in 1834. About 30 years ago, John started his own impact on the local landscape when he headed up the Tarragal Landcare Group, which took a landscape-scale approach to reversing the clearing of vegetation in their local area. From planting north-south corridors of vegetation to espousing the benefits of local landcare facilitators, John's history with landcare is strongly rooted in the theory of living on and with the land.
Cashmore Park, I'm here with John Keelor, and we're his history with the Catchment Management Authority and landcare. Thanks for having us today.
Very welcome, Marius. A few ideas on to the listeners.
Well, what an amazing history you've had here. It's quite a famous property, and you're known as very much an innovative thinker and a forward thinker in agriculture and land management, and that traces all the way back to your long association with landcare.
Yeah, that's right. About 30 years ago, the Tarragal Landcare Group formed, and we didn't have a landcare group in the area, and a group of farmers got together and a few locals and thought we needed to be a bit more organised in our approach to the natural environment.
So that was very much the era of landcare as well, of course. So what was the initial aim of that landcare group when it started?
Well, the group came together and we really wanted to look at a landscape position of all the properties in our area and just get a bit of a baseline and see where we were at in regards to some of our natural assets on our properties.
And so from what we were just talking about before, I mean, that was the era when everyone was doing whole farm planning, but you basically did a whole farm plan across the entire landcare group as a unit, which is a very innovative approach to it.
Yeah, the catalyst for me getting involved there was, first of all, I did a small whole farm plan on the property, but I was inspired because I'd been at a place and the chap there said he had a lot of work to do on 200 acres, and we said, why is that? And he said, well, I've only got four trees on the place, three in the front yard and one in the backyard. And we looked at him and we realised that's what it was like. So I knew I had to do something to improve my lot. From the group's point of view, we came together and we did a whole farm, not a whole farm plan, but like a environmental overlay over all the properties. And then we sort of averaged that out to see where we were at.
And you've got an amazing part of Australia to work with here, including land that has been grazed longer than any other land in Victoria.
Yeah, we were only thinking about this the other day, having a bit of a chat, and the Hentys came to Portland in 1834 and they had sheep grazing over various places, including Cape Bridgewater and around the Bridgewater Lakes. And we farmed that area and have since the 70s or even much earlier than that on a few other small titles. So we've got sheep grazing over there at the moment that's been grazed by sheep since 1834. So, it's something.
So obviously since that time there's been a lot of land clearing and opening up the country and getting it productive, and you're before talking about almost a pendulum that swung one way and now is swinging back, and you said that across your 1,800 hectares, probably 10% is now native vegetation, waterways and agroforestry. Where is the sweet spot for you?
Well, we don't really know where that is, Marius, because the way I see it, the old fellows, they started with a bush and they started clearing it and they just kept clearing and clearing, and the livestock, you know, would knock something down or wouldn't allow young things to come back. In my case, we've started putting trees back, and we've been trying to improve the natural environment, or improve our natural capital, as it's called these days. And we've got up to the 10% mark, but we don't really know how far we need to go. I don't have an economic answer to say we need to get to, say, 15% or 20%. I don't know that. I've certainly got some anecdotal and some personal views on the benefits that we have received, but I really don't know exactly how much we need to put back.
And you said early on that in that planning that there was a lot of east-west corridors of native vegetation, but not a lot of north-south. So over the last 30 years, you've been trying to patch that together. How has that worked? What have you planted, and what difference have you seen?
So, yeah, the landscape here at Cashmore, or in the Tarrigal Landcare Group, is sort of dominated by five east-west runs, being roads, major roads, or man-dug drains, or natural watercourses. So really we only had wildlife that could run along or could move along those corridors that way. After we looked at that from an aerial point of view, we understood that, and so then we started planting along some roadsides and also across properties to link ourselves from south to north, also knowing that that as climates change, we're going to need that to happen. We have found that it's been somewhat slim pickings for making quite a diverse species range with the plantings that we've put in. So there's probably really only about 10 species that have adapted, plant species that are quite good to put across, you know, like a ryegrass clover-based paddock as you revegetate. They've been very successful, and other species have been less successful. So that's what we've really done.
And you don't have to look far to see what, you know, nature has provided here. So what sort of trees and shrubs have you put in those areas?
There's usually about three or four gum trees that have been quite good. There's been swamp gum, bog gum, a little bit of manna gum, every now and then a few red gums, because they're only about 50 k's north of us and a drier climate to allow them to come through. There's been acacia melanops, and there's been blackwood and some golden wattle. There's been things like some garnias. There's a couple of tea trees, prickly and woolly tea tree. Might have been silver wattles as well. So we've put in those that have been able to compete or withstand, I guess, the competition they get from our existing pastures. And they've been a great starting point, I suppose, to suck up some of the nutrients and the competition from their existing landscape where they're at.
And you've said you've certainly got a lot of different bird species and animal species through. Have you seen the extent and the frequency of those species expand, or have you changed? How's the native population changed in that 30 years?
One of the focused birds that we looked at for the Tarrigal Landcare Group were rufous bristlebirds, and they only live around the coast. And we did notice that when we put plantations in, it allowed them to get across previous open areas which they can't get to, and they actually went to areas they'd actually been on but had become locally extirped from it. And that gave them like a thoroughfare so they could get back to those areas. So those sorts of things were obviously observed. You'd only have to stand in the shearing shed at 8 o'clock in the morning and you could hear them calling and say, look at that, they're back over there. And even they went into new places where we hadn't seen them for 50 years, and so you could hear them calling. So they've used those plantations to get there. That's really what we saw, and that's just an example of one species, but there obviously there's many more as well.
And does that give you a sense of pride, or what how does that make you feel?
My grandfather was the inaugural president of the Portland Field Naturalists back around the turn of the century. That's two centuries ago now, the 1900s, and my father was a president there also. So my family's also always been interested in natural history, and we've realised that, you know, we've lived on the land, but we've always had to live with the land as well. So I guess I'm certainly trying to leave the land in a better shape or form than I first started farming. So if I could leave something like that, I always think if I could leave a legacy to my three sons in the future or their families, that that would be a great thing to do. So that's really probably what drives me on.
So do you feel as though you're living and farming sustainably here now, or is the 10% swing still swinging towards 15% in terms of returning land to natural species?
Well, you think 10% of farm area down to, you know, to native areas or native used areas is a lot, but if you go and look on an aerial photograph, you find that you've got huge areas, like in some places there's hundreds of acres with very, very little cover there. And you think of the farmed animals you've got there. You've got sheep and cattle out there and newborn animals and growing animals, and you've got hard, cold, wet days, and you've got hot, windy, dry days, and you see the animals and you realize that, would you like to stand out there? I'm sure we can make it better, Marius. I'm sure we can make it better, even better. So I think we've got a lot more work to do. How much? I don't know, but we won't stop planting, and we won't stop planning, and we won't stop learning.
It's interesting. We sort of opened up a whole new conversation now about natural capital accounting, which is very much sort of commonplace now. Do you think as farmers we're starting to be recognised as stewards of the land as well, and are going to be recognised for that commercially?
Well, at some stage, we have to get to sustainability, and unless we're recognised for that as being custodians of the land and managing that, we won't get sustainability. We'll still have give and take, won't we? So we do have to get to that place. I guess the so-called masses of the city, or the people that we feed wherever they are, they need to realise that to get their food and their clean water, those products are coming from people like myself, and so they need to be aware of that, and we need to be accountable for our position so that we keep producing that for them.
Wow, that's another hour and a bottle of red wine there, I think. But in terms of your association with Landcare and the Catchment Management Authority, the Glenelg Hopkins Catchment Management Authority, what's been your association with them over the 30 years?
They've been very important funders. The CMA has certainly been a generous funder to ourselves and other financial processes as well. A lot of the works you do involve quite a lot of cost, and some of that would be above and beyond what you would naturally spend on a farm, or that the typical person would spend on a farm. So if you can get some financial help in starting these processes, if you can get some financial help in trees, some advice also is very important. I think one of the very important parts out of that, Marius, has been facilitators in the process, because there's quite a lot of paperwork. Farmers aren't also keen on paperwork. So I've always thought that a facilitator in a Landcare group, and in Portland's case, it's got one that oversees a number of groups, has been a very, very important development that's been very positive over time. So I'm very thankful for that.
And how do you feel about the future? It's been a challenging couple of years for a lot of farmers. You've got the next generation coming through here as well in terms of people. How do you feel about your next 30 years?
Well, I guess you keep learning as you go. So you try and work a few systems out. We've managed to get ourselves as a business into a scale position. We've got some skills on board. We've got some resources behind us. We've got some young people with energy coming. The world needs the food that we produce, and so I'm quite comfortable about that. I'm sure that we'll move into the tomorrows as they come, and we'll continue to figure out how to make more for less, which is basically what agriculture does all the time. So we can get more efficient. We've got some things in place with some of our animals which will lift their productivity and their efficiency. And I'm somewhat excited to see where they'll take us in the future.
Well, you've certainly helped take agriculture into the future over the last 30 years, and we look forward to continuing to hear your thoughts on where we should be going and the opportunities. As a thought leader, you've provided a great value to agriculture, but also clearly to nature here as well. So thank you very much for your time today, and congratulations on the amazing work you've done here.
Thanks, Marius. You're very welcome.
John Keilor's aim to improve the biodiversity around the Portland region with a wide environmental overlay on everything he does is really quite inspirational. Our thanks to Marius Cumming, who's conducted this series of podcast interviews for the Glenelg Hopkin CMA. If you want to find out more about Landcare and the other Landcare leaders being showcased as part of this series, you can do so by visiting ghcma.vic.gov.au or by following us on any of the main social media channels.